Welcome to the Exit Coach Radio Show, the show for baby boomer business owners who are looking for cutting-edge information as they plan their 3 to 10 year business succession and exit. Every week, we interview top professional advisors for their best tips, strategies, and precautions so you can be well-planned. And don't miss our one-minute Exit Coach tip of the day on ExitCoachRadio.com. And now, here's your host, the Exit Coach, Bill Black.
Welcome, everyone. Thanks so much for listening today. I'm very pleased to introduce our next guest, and he is Ron Burglass of It's Me Public Speaking. And we're going to talk about how even corporate executives, you know, you get scared when you're speaking in public. It's one of the biggest fears people have. And we're going to talk about how you can get over that a little bit and deal with that. And It's Me Public Speaking was created to help people from all walks of life to get over their fear of speaking in public. So let's get into this. Ron, welcome to the show, and thanks very much for joining us today.
Morning.
Hey, Ron, tell me a little bit about your background and how you came to start It's Me Public Speaking.
I'd be delighted. I started out as a professional actor. I studied in university in America, and then I moved to England, where I went to drama school, went to the Central School of Speech and Drama, graduated from there, got an agent, and started working. And over 25 years as a professional actor, I spent literally thousands of hours on stage in front of radio and television cameras and mics, 20 commercials. I had a lot of experience in the business. I then moved back to America, and after some time driving 18-wheelers, I became a teacher, retrained in my 50s. And after spending 10 years as a teacher and 25 years as a professional actor, I decided to put my talents together and see how I could help people. Because I don't happen to have any fears of public speaking, but I know it is a huge fear, the number one fear, I thought I had some ability to help people get over that fear, and so far it's been extremely successful.
Now, Ron, you say you don't have any fears. Do you ever get butterflies?
Absolutely, I had butterflies, and just because you get nervous, and we all get nervous, doesn't mean it should affect you. I think one of the biggest problems or mistakes that people make is that they think that because they're nervous, they're somehow going to mess up. Nerves are part of it. They can't really be stopped, except if you've had a lot of experience. But even if you've had a lot of experience, having butterflies, getting excited, looking forward to what you're about to do, that's all part of it. It's how you use that energy to make your speech even better.
It's all hardwired into our brain and our nervous system, right?
That's right. And really, the idea of trying to fight those nerves makes your job an awful lot harder than it needs to be. And instead, if you learn how to incorporate those nerves, those fears, and turn them into energy and focus your talk, the better off you'll be.
And so some people out there might just say, if they're offered to give a speech, they might say, no, thanks, that they might be missing an opportunity. But of course, a lot of people, especially business owners and people in the limelight, are required to get up in front of people and give a speech every so often. It just is part of the job. So what makes people so nervous about speaking in public, Ron?
I think there are a number of factors that come into it. One is that they're frightened of being judged. For whatever reason, they don't think of themselves as public speakers. Somehow they think that public speakers are supposed to sound a certain way or look a certain way. I once had a superintendent of a school district say to me, how can I sound more like a speaker? And I said, well, you are a speaker. Your voice is perfect. What you look like is perfect. What you sound like is perfect. The idea is to develop the confidence in yourself and your ability to communicate what you need to communicate rather than to turn you into somebody else. Same goes with accents. A lot of people are very frightened of getting up and speaking with strong accents. I find that both as a teacher and as a professional speaker. And from my mind, having an accent is like having musical accompaniment to your speech. As long as you speak clearly, whatever accent you have, it's going to be tremendously effective and even more interesting to the listening public if you come with that sense of foreignness, uniqueness, whatever it is. It's not something to be ashamed of. It's something to celebrate.
That's a great idea. You're dressing up your voice, and you should be proud of that. So now, what are some of the ways people should deal with that stress that they're having, that nervousness that they're having when they're getting ready to give a speech?
Well, there's a few things. It's actually a physical exercise to get up in front of people. And people seem to underestimate what they're doing physically when they get up. They focus, as they should do, on their material, and they don't take the time to actually practice speaking. So what they do is they tend to sit quietly in a corner or wherever in their office, going through their speech quietly, muttering it to themselves, sitting at a desk, or even in their car before they get up and get in front of people. My suggestion would be, to, in order to avoid the physical shock of getting up in front of people, to practice it standing up out loud, so that the first time they hear the speech coming out of their mouths, it's not in front of an audience, but in their room or in their office or wherever. And so once they hear their voice coming out of their mouth, that mitigates some of the shock of doing it in front of people. By the same token, standing up and using your physical presence, feeling that presence, getting up and speaking also helps, so that when you get up behind a podium or with a mic, that you're already used to standing up, moving around with your speech. That will also mitigate the shock of being up in front of people.
Now, a lot of people write out every word that they're going to speak, and then they're kind of caught in that situation of reading it as they get up in front of people. Is that a definite no-no? Should they have memorized it before they get up?
No. Here's what happens when you memorize a speech. You spend all your time up there trying to make sure you don't forget. And that's not what the people have come to see. Because when you do forget, what happens is your eyes drift. Usually they go up, because somehow they think that by looking up they're going to see that word, but it doesn't happen. And they become more insecure, more nervous, and that communicates to the audience. It communicates an insecurity, and that insecurity communicates to the audience, and that's not what you want them to feel. What you do need to do is to go through that speech over and over again, not reading it, but having a conversation with your audience, speaking it, talking to your audience. Make sure that it's something that you believe, that you feel passionately about, and you want to communicate not just the material, but your passion about what you're talking about. But so that if you practice that standing up out loud, using the speech in front of you, don't get rid of it, keep it in front of you. And if you need to refer to it, then refer to it. Don't make apologies for referring to it. Look at it. Get your place. Make it look like you're thinking about it. You're taking your time to think about your next point. Don't be embarrassed. And if you do make a mistake, of course, you're the only person that knows you're making a mistake. Make a mistake and go, oh, my God, oh, dear, oh, and you do all that stuff, of course, the audience is going to know. But if you make the mistake and just carry on, nobody's going to know, nobody's going to care. And the audience is inclined to like you anyway. So unless you work really hard to put them off, they're going to enjoy you if you're enjoying yourself.
Now, Ron, you've got a lot of years on the stage, a lot of years acting, and what would be the ratio of time you spent rehearsing what you were going to say relative to the time that you actually spent on the stage saying it?
Well, if you're talking about a script, then there's a rehearsal process. There's a time limit involved, usually 3 to 4 weeks of rehearsal, and then however long the run is. And I've done as many as 500 performances of a play. But what I do find extremely helpful is, no matter the length of the run or the number of times you have to give a speech, you always go back to the text. You always go back to your speech. Doesn't matter how many times you've done it. If you get up in front of an audience and you give them the feeling that you've been there and done it, why should they care if you don't? So you go back to the text, you look at it, can I make this better, can I tweak this, can I change that, can I adjust it for the audience, because you have to be aware of the audience that you're speaking to and adjust it accordingly. So there's never a time when you don't prepare, no matter how many times you've done it. And I'll give you an example. I recently did a workshop with a sales force, and there were several people there who said that they had no fear of public speaking whatsoever. That's fine. That ought to make my job easier. But the reality was that when they did get up to speak, they were really quite boring. They had become so desensitized to their audience's needs. All they were doing was giving their sales pitch, and they were quite fluent in that. The reality is that if you do not connect your material with your audience, it's going to not be effective.
I guess what I was getting at is, let's say someone out there says, well, I've got to give this 10-minute speech. What's a good rule of thumb for how much time I should spend preparing for that speech?
Well, first of all, focus on what it is that they want you to talk about, and then practice it. Practice, practice, practice. I don't know that there's any rule of thumb for the amount of preparation versus the amount of time you're going to speak. Practice it. See if it fills up 10 minutes. If it doesn't, put in some more. Look if there's any salient facts that you need, that they need for you to say, and incorporate that. And whatever happens, don't rush. Don't ever rush. As soon as you start stumbling over words, that's a big signal that you need to slow down. like a little alarm. I watched my son on stage the other day, and I watched him stumble over some words, and he knew what he had to do, and instead of carrying on at that speed, he slowed down. For anybody speaking in public, that's a big alarm. As far as preparation, again, put together what they want you to say, give them, leave them with something of value. And you can certainly do that in 10 minutes. Does that mean you do 10 minutes of preparation? No. You prepare however long it takes in order to give them value. That's all that matters.
Excellent stuff. Okay, well, let's move on from that. I've heard you say connections a couple times, and I've read that in your preparation notes, there's something called the three connections. What are the three connections?
Absolutely vital if you're going to speak in public. The first connection is to connect with yourself, to feel comfortable with what you're doing. That doesn't mean that you go out and take a drink, because that's the worst thing you can do before you speak in public. You have nerves to deal with. Deal with those nerves. You have material that you have to prepare. Prepare that material and understand what you bring to that speech. Why do they want you? What is it about you that makes you qualified to give that material? Now, you might think, oh, my God, there's people there that are more experienced than I am, that know the subject better than I do. It doesn't matter. What matters is that they want you up there. Give them what they want. Give them you. Give them your character, what's special about you. And they will enjoy it because they want to. Connecting with yourself and how you deal with the nerves, that's the first part. The second connection is dealing with the text. Connecting with the text. How can you make that text sound like it's coming out of your mouth for the very first time? You want to make it sound not like something that's been written, but something that's going to be said. So connecting with that text is a big part of it. You can actually mark up the text. You can adjust the text so that there are bits that build, that rise, and that lead to a climax. And then you can adjust the tone and go down. There are ways of marking the text in order to have maximum impact on your audience. And the third part of it is ultimately connect with your audience. It's not just reading a speech. You need to speak. You need to have a conversation with your audience. So the more internalized you are, the more internal you are, or if you feel you have to apologize in some way for being up there, you're going to put a block between you and your audience. You need to envelop them. You need to take them in with your eyes and with the volume and with your enunciation so that you are welcoming them by speaking clearly, by letting them hear every single word that you're saying. They're going to love you. That's because you are putting your speech out there and saying, here you are, I'm giving this to you. But if you keep it to yourself, or if there's something about you that says, I'm not really good, I really shouldn't be doing this, even if you're not saying that, that is actually going to be communicated to your audience and you won't be as effective. That's why those three connections are of vital importance every time anybody gets up to speak.
Great tips, Ron. Thank you very much for those connections. That's wonderful stuff. And
if someone's heard that they should get up and tell a joke, is that a good idea or a bad idea?
I think, generally speaking, it's a bad idea because everybody's got a different sense of humor. I know we've all been sent these emails where somebody has found something that's funny and they send them to us, or they post them on social media, and we look at them and say, well, they might think that's funny, or they actually write down, this is hilarious, and you look at it and say, well, I don't think so. So imagine that's happening with an audience, and you put in something that's really, really funny, and it lands like a lead balloon. So instead of breaking the ice, you're actually freezing it over. If you want to be funny, the best thing you could do is to be self-deprecating, not overly self-deprecating, but certainly talk about a time when something didn't quite work for you. Put that not at the beginning of the speech, but something towards the beginning of the speech, and carry on with that. If things seem like they're going badly or you're insecure, talk about something that didn't work out for you. Self-deprecation and humility go a long way, as opposed to arrogance, which tends to put people off. You see what I mean?
Great. Yeah, very good. Very good. I like that. There's a lot of people out there that said, well, you know, I don't really need help with this. I'm the boss. And so what do you do if you're the boss and you think you don't need help, but you got to give this a speech?
Well, if you're a celebrated public speaker, then you probably don't need help. But if nobody is questioning you because you are the boss, those are certainly warning signs. You are the boss, so people think they can't question you because their jobs are on the line. So you need to surround yourself like any good actor. I used to, you know, when you're an actor, people come up to you and they give you all kinds of praise. And as an actor, you have to just say thank you. You don't argue. If they criticize you, you say thank you. If they give you praise, you say thank you. But you surround yourself with people who are straight with you as well, maybe two or three people whose job is not on the line, who are willing to talk to you, and you are willing to listen to them. And as long as they're straight with you, that's what you need. Because quite often people have been speaking for so long to the same people that the employees are expecting them to speak and don't really take anything out of it. But if you have somebody there who comes up to you afterwards and says, well, that was boring, I have one of the people that I work with. He is the boss of a major company. He comes to me secretly and asks me for help. And it's very difficult for him because his ego, on the one hand, refuses to believe that he needs the help. But the other part of him says, well, maybe I do. And since he started coming to me, his speeches have improved. People have been coming to him and giving him compliments, unlike anything he'd ever experienced before. So it's tough to admit that you need help, but it does help when you admit it.
Okay, that's fantastic. Now, let me ask you a question. One last question here, and that is, a lot of people have said you, when you're giving a speech, what you really need is a strong beginning and a strong finish. Do you agree with that? And if so, what tips could you give our listeners regarding that advice?
I do agree with that. I think you have to start strong because you have to hook your audience. You have to get them right away. And I think it's a combination of telling them what they're going to speak about, but also by sheer force of your personality and how much you enjoy what you're talking about. If you can communicate that up front, and even more to the point, if you can give them permission to be vocal, to laugh, getting them to laugh, and I don't mean by telling a joke, but by, like I said before, being self-deprecating, talking about an experience that didn't quite work out. If you can give them permission to make noise by letting them laugh, then you've got them, and you don't have to work so hard to keep them afterwards. You do have to work, but you don't have to work as hard because you will have got them right in the beginning. And then at the end, what's so important is that you leave them with something of value. So by ending your speech, not just by summarizing what you said, but by making the point that needs to be made above and beyond everything else, you're then leaving them with something of value. So a strong ending is vital.
Excellent. And is it important, is one good technique to put some kind of a hook or phrase out there at the towards the beginning that you bring it back to, you know, the old tell them what you're going to tell them, then tell them, and then tell them what you told them kind of a thing?
Well, yeah, I do agree with you. But if you put something in the beginning of your speech that you then chart towards the end of your speech so that you find that there's a hook between, the audience discovers that there's a hook between what you started out talking about and the end result, that will give them a sense like, oh my God, we really have been taken on a great journey, because that's what you're doing. You are taking your audience on a journey. You start one place, you end someplace else. And if you can put something at the beginning of the speech that with a sense of surprise they come back to at the end, you really will have taken them on something special. And that's a great thing to be able to do.
Ron, I would love to hear you speak sometime, and I understand you train business groups like Vistage and other business groups that get together. So what's the best way for them to get in touch with you, and just give us some contact info?
The best way to get a hold of me is just to call my work number, which is 909-283-3991. And I do have a website. It's itsmepublicspeaking.com, or you can email me at info@itsmepublicspeaking.com.
So it's me, ITSME, just like it sounds, publicspeaking.com, right?
Mm-hmm.
Ron Burgos, thank you so much for joining us. Very insightful, great tips, and a lot of great information here. I really look forward to catching up with you sometime in the future and getting some more tips for our listeners, because I think that's a fantastic information and a great service you provide.
Thanks, Bill. It's been a privilege.
We're going to be right back after this with another guest, so please stay tuned. Does thinking about what will happen to your business if you're gone keep you awake at night? Will you get the price you need from your business to carry you through retirement? The BEI Network of Exit Planning Professionals is the world's leading advisor network with the power to help business owners transition out of business on their own timeline and terms. Ask your most trusted advisor to create a BEI plan for you, or visit us at exitplanning.com. That's exitplanning.com.
You're listening to ExitCoachRadio.com, the information station for age 50-plus business owners, where we're interviewing top advisors for their best tips, ideas, and precautions so you can be well-planned. We upload new one-minute tips every day. ExitCoachRadio.com. Come listen for a minute.
Thank you for listening to Exit Coach Radio.